The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 31st of July, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Martin Higginson, Chief Executive Officer of Emotion. And Martin talks about their fundraise, which is being used to accelerate their partnership model strategy. Also on the podcast, Paul McGlone, CEO of Sea Machines, discusses the deal with National Express to provide their Guardian driver safety technology to its fleets. Plus, Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources, XTR, provides a general update on their operations after their recent fundraise. And John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about the US-China trade talks, the gold price, and the following companies: Ark Minerals, Keras Resources, and Bushveld Minerals. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you: the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you can also see other content, articles, blogs, videos, all that, voxmarkets.co.uk.
Are you tired of missing news about stock market companies you follow? The Vox Markets app helps investors stay ahead by making sure you never miss an important update. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Martin Higginson, Emotion Group CEO. Martin, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Good to speak to you again.
And by the way, the ticker for Emotion is IMMO, if people want to search for that. A lot of news coming out. I mean, just now you've had some more news out on a Jurassic Park VR Expedition rollout. We'll get into that. But I suppose the big news is the placing strategy update and all that, and we'll dig into that. Before we do, as always, Martin, a brief summary about Emotion for people not familiar with the company, please, if you could.
Yeah, Emotion is an out-of-home sort of virtual reality immersive experience company. We specialize in partnering with high-footfall leisure destinations in delivering immersive experiences to their audiences. Partnership model, where we're able to share revenue with them and deliver them valuable ancillary revenue.
Yeah, well, let's dig into this strategy. So, a strategy update, you've raised just under $2.5 million. And take us through why you wanted the money, and what's the money going to be used for, Ronnie?
You know, I think what's really, really important here is that, you know, we're not raising the money to keep the lights on. This is about raising the money for executing our plan. We've got a very exciting plan. We pivoted the business to focus very, very much on our partnership model. So this is all about partnering up with high footfall leisure destinations to deliver them something that is hyper relevant to their audience. So if we're in an aquarium, then it's you know, aquatic content. If we're in a zoo, it's zoo content. Same with the science center, it might be space content, and then maybe roller coasters in a high footfall sort of leisure destination. So we've got very relevant content surrounded in a themed surround, which makes it even more obvious what the product is. And we're doing this, we share the revenue with the partners. And the reason for this fundraise is we're now seeing more and more sort of customers coming towards us, partners coming towards us, wanting our products. We're seeing amazing results from these partners. And what we want to do is take advantage of this rising tide. So the money that we've raised is to buy equipment to install into these sites. And that will help us not only hit break even, but fund our growth plans into 2020 and beyond.
Yeah, and so whenever you start a business, you're a businessman there, I suppose you have a broad idea, you start down that road, and then one part of the business starts sort of really outperforming. And is that what you found with the partnership side of the business, is it?
Look, as you know, and we've spoken about before, I've started many, many businesses that have grown to a reasonable size. Now, you know, what is important when you start a business is that you start fairly wide and you sort of, you know, throw a lot against the wall and see what sticks. Now, what we've done, and I think what is really, really important, is when you get something and that not only is working and it's giving you the evidence, and you then test it, retest it, and it keeps giving you the same results, and those results are fantastic, then what you have to do is get rid of the stuff that isn't core and focus on the one thing that is making you the most money. And that's what we've done here. The partnership model is tremendously exciting. You know, we can really hit the ground running here. We're the only ones doing it. This is a very complicated business. Our content management and reporting system is all proprietary technology. It's difficult to build. You know, so we've really got an advantage here. Our experiences are out of this world, whether it's CGI or live action. You know, we're one of the few people that's actually doing all of this and connecting all these dots together to deliver a complete turnkey solution for partners. So I think when we get all that information, what you've got to do in any business is you've got to take it, get rid of the stuff that's not there, and actually focus in and really, you know, it's then about execution more than anything else.
Yeah. Do you know, when you announced the fundraise, I saw quite a few investors having a whinge about the price and everything, but I was quite encouraged by the update, because you're saying you have a road and you put a date in the sand there to being EBITDA break even. So you reckon what, by Q1 next year you'll be break even?
Yeah, look, every week that goes by, our averages go up. So our average revenue per headset is increasing. And the more quality partners we add, the more that average goes up. And the more the average goes up, the more our break-even number sort of falls. But we've sort of said about 400 headsets early quarter one 2020. You know, we're aiming to beat that. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we're encouraged by just this growing number, this growing average that just makes our life that much better. Now, I think, you know, people sort of say, you know, are you going to raise money, the price, et cetera, et cetera. You know, look, we needed to raise money. We went and saw our major investors. You know, we told them what we wanted to do. We felt the timing was right to raise the money. We'd always like to raise it at a higher value. Of course we would. But there's 2 days that matter in public life, the day you buy and the day you sell. And I think, you know, providing that you're holding Emotion stock and the management holds a lot of this stock, then, you know, you should, in my view, we're very relaxed. We know what we're doing. We can see the runway. We can see the pathway to break even, and we can see the pathway to our plan for sort of 2020 and beyond. So we're very, very relaxed. And now we've got the cash in the tin to actually fuel that growth plan.
Yeah, and you reckon you're going to get to a 410 headsets by Q1, but you reckon you're aiming for 1,000 headsets by the end of the year 2020. I mean, are you confident not only is demand there, but you'll be able to do that?
Yeah, look, you know, execution is always a risk in any business, but by focusing in on the partnership model, we can hone those execution skills. You know, we've now got clear departments that are all working this, and, you know, at the moment we're installing sort of 30-40 headsets a month at the moment. So, you know, we need to install probably 50 headsets a month as we go into 2020. So it's not a massive stretch, so we can see how we can do that, and we've now got a performance team that's in place that holds the partner's hands to make sure that we enhance performance. So I can see all that sort of, you know, is going to be relatively easy in terms of the mechanics. In terms of the landscape and the audience, you know, there are 10,000 zoos in the world. You know, there's 2,000 aquariums in the market that we're in. There's thousands and thousands of family entertainment centres and high footfall leisure destinations. And then you add on museums and science centres and you get to a big number. Now, if you look at it, you know, if we averaged, you know, 5 headsets per site, that's 200 sites on a global market against probably, you know, an audience of in excess of sort of 20,000 locations. So I think the number's realistic. It's about quality locations over quantity for us. And if we get to 1,000 headsets, you know, and, you know, if we average £400 a headset, then that would deliver you over 20 million of revenues. But I think what's important to look at is, you know, every additional £100 that we add from the performance of our partners delivers an extra 2.6 million at 1,000 headsets of EBITDA to our company.
Yeah, yeah, and you can get there now, sort of being self-funded after this fundraise.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, we've laid out a plan. We, you know, the cash that we've raised will fund that plan and fund us through to where we want to get to. So we're very, very confident in what we've raised and in our ability to execute that.
Yeah, and I suppose, like you say, it is quality, and like I said, you've got some excellent brands there, like with Merlin, which now is sort of Lego, and you've got O2. So And I've always said this before, when you hook up with brands like this, you know, strong brands, it's due diligence for other brands, isn't it? Because, well, if those guys are signing with them, they've got to be a good company, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've got, you know, another 118 headsets that are agreed or subject to contract. Those contracts will all flow through over the next sort of few weeks and months. You'll see even, you know, some big brands in those contracts as well, which will just further underpin our sort of place in the marketplace. And you're absolutely right. This forms great due diligence. And we're now starting to see this snowball effect from customers. We've got new content that we're going to do for zoos. We've got new content that we're doing for science centres, and I think, you know, we'll package those up in a way that this will be a real first for those vertical markets, and it will allow, if you're in a zoo, it will allow their audience to go and look at endangered species that they can't see in the zoo. We can recreate in virtual reality, so they can get up close and personal to these endangered species. Mm-hmm. Science centres, it will allow you to maybe take a trip to the moon or beyond, and you know, you can actually experience what it's like to sort of sit in a rocket ship. So I think we can bring all of this. So not only does it drive ancillary revenue, it's also a very valuable tool in order to allow them to get additional sort of customers through the door of their centres.
Yeah. Well, talking about sort of, you know, that kind of content there, you've just, before we've come on, released an RNS, you've signed a deal to roll out Jurassic World VR Expedition. Take us through that. What's all that about?
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, a company called VRC, based in Hollywood, we've been in talks with them for quite a while. They produced the Jurassic World VR Expedition that rolled out in the US late last year. We've now signed a deal to roll that out into the Middle East, Europe, and selected outlets in the US. So I think it's just another addition to our portfolio of products that we can now offer to partners. And they're not having to buy this equipment, we just partner with them. So it becomes a very, you know, simple decision process for any partner. If you want to have sort of, you know, Jurassic World VR Expedition in your center, then, you know, you can partner with us. There's no capital outlay. We just share the revenue. So it's a very easy decision process that doesn't have to go of sort of CapEx decisions at board levels and stuff. This can be made operationally, normally at sort of, you know, by the general manager of an outlet.
Absolutely. One final thing before I ask you the three reasons why someone should add you to their watch list. What's your feeling at the moment? Are you quite excited for the future here?
Yeah, look, we're very, very excited. You know, it's, you know, I think there are a number of things in business that you look for. One is you look for something that is clearly working and giving you that empiric evidence that it is working. We've got that. Secondly, that you can roll out and you've got the cash to roll out. We've now got that in place. And we've now got a management team that we've grown. We've got performance teams. We've got great sales teams. We've got a brilliant team in place to execute this. So I think, you know, all in all, you know, I think we're now primed, for success. It's just about focus and execution now.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, just a summary, if you could, Martin. If someone's listening right now and likes the sound of the progress you're making but are not yet following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Look, I think you've got to look at the macro, and I think VR is a great macro trend. It's not a fad. It's going to be here to stay, and all the predictions are that this is going to be a huge, huge market. I think if you then look at the micro, emotion is in there. It is generating substantive revenues that are growing every single week in this exciting market. And then I think if you then look at what we're doing, third, we're focusing in on these partners, these places that have already got high footfall locations. So by tapping into that high footfall, we're able to deliver something that is vertical specific to that audience. And what we found is that audience is buying and they're loving what we're doing.
Excellent stuff. Martin, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin. Take care.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul McGlone, Chief Executive Officer of Seeing Machines. SEE is ticker there. Paul, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
And you've just become permanent CEO. And so how's it working out for you at the moment? Is it good?
Look, I'm obviously very pleased to have the role, and I'm also very pleased with the momentum that we're building in the business.
Yeah, well, listen, some good news coming out of late, and we'll get into that in a bit. Before we do, as always, for people maybe not familiar with Seeing Machines, can you explain or give a brief summary as to what the business is all about, please, Paul?
Yeah, sure can. Look, at our core, we develop high-performance driver monitoring systems, and these systems detect fatigue and distraction in drivers. We're the leader in the driver monitoring system business, and our technology is validated by some of the largest automotive and fleet owners in the world. And look, the bottom line is our technology saves lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, do you know what? You've done deals with lots of big companies, but of late you've just announced a deal with National Express, which I know a lot of people know over here, but it's an international company. Can you tell us more about that deal, please?
Look, I sure can. Yes, it is a huge coach and bus company operating right across the Northern Hemisphere. We're really pleased to work with National Express. I mean, they've got a safety culture. They're exactly the kind of large fleet owner that we want to work with and we can work with. The adoption of this technology by them is, you know, further support of the leadership position that we have. The service that we offer is delivered through what we call our Guardian product. It's a retrofit system. It performs, you know, the driver monitoring service, and we provide the driver and the fleet owner with real-time alerts that really keep the driver focused on the task of driving, and that's very, very important. And so when we detect a fatigue or distraction event, we have a 24/7 capability to keep the fleet owner engaged and informed as to what's going on. We're seeing very strong momentum in the UK and Europe. And we've recently appointed a new distributor in the UK as well. So look, National Express, great company, large company, very important to us, and exactly the kind of company with a strong safety culture that we want to deal with.
Yeah, and especially when you get these kind of brands sign up with you. I suppose it's due diligence for other brands almost anyway. Let's talk about last week you announced a deal in your automotive business. Can you expand on that, please, Paul?
Look, I can. And the automotive business, and we refer to it as our sort of OEM business, mm-hmm. is really what most investors are interested in. And we've actually won an expansion of an existing contract with what is a significant German OEM customer. And what this means, it's very significant, because what it means is that our technology is continuing to be validated, not only by new customers like National Express, but by existing customers that have been working with us for some time. So we're very delighted to have more business with this OEM. And as I say, it's a further validation and I think a sign of good things to come.
Yeah. And in that announcement there, you talk about NCAP requirements. Can you expand on that bit, please?
So the new car assessment program for Europe in particular is really the leading body for safety ratings around the world. And they're in the process of really setting a set of safety objectives. And these objectives include things like emergency braking, keeping in lane assistance, and driver monitoring technology. And it's the driver monitoring technology component that is obviously relevant to us. So this particular OEM is, essentially getting ahead of the game, mm-hmm. and making sure that, you know, they'll be in a very strong position to maximise their safety ratings, when these cars hit the road.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay, Paul. Well, listen, as always on the podcast, what I do is I ask for three reasons why someone should add to their watch list. So, now, given those quick summary of what's going on and what's come up almost in three bulleted points, why should someone hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please?
Look, we're the leader in our technology. We have a depth of in-house experience in this computer vision, machine learning, AI area, and we are, in fact, the leader. From a market point of view, there's an inflection point from about 2022 onwards. Most of the contracts that we've won, more than eight to date, will be going to production, and those volumes will be driven further by NCAP. And finally, you know, I'd suggest, certainly I believe, that our business is considerably undervalued. We have strong technology, validated from global OEMs, airlines like Emirates and FedEx, and you know, very, very large fleets all around the world, the likes of National Express. So momentum's building and we're undervalued.
Excellent stuff, Paul. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Colin Bird, Executive Chairman of Extract Resources. XTR is ticker there. Colin, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. Much appreciated.
Now, before we get into doing a bit of a general update, because I know you've just raised some funds and to help you carry on, you know, progressing what you've got there, before we get into it, just give us a general summary for people not familiar with Extract. What's it all about, please, Colin?
Well, Extract, of course, if you turn the clock back to last year, was about the Manica project in Mozambique. It was about gold production, and the hard rock production being sort of preceded by alluvial production. And the market knew that we had to raise money and to get the hard rock project going. And we've announced that we've done a net profits interest deal, which I'll explain later. So that was Mozambique bedded down in terms of immediate production capacity and cash flow, and the potential for quite significant cash flow in the space of the next 8 months to 10 months, and possibly some before year end. But that, you know, then looking at Extract, better to bet your to balance your commodity risk, country risk, and so we announced to the market that we'd acquired some exploration projects. And of late, we basically entered into a deal with KPZ, where we got ourselves a 90-day option on the Kalengwa processing project. And Kalengwa was a very, very significant mine in the past. And we're looking towards enjoying the work in the dumps, with most of the mining risk and gone, and it's only uplifting the dump. And, of course, potential to extend the pit in all directions. So that was a recent announcement. So we're looking at a balanced company now, which is, we were looking at a balanced company before, but in balance in terms of commodity and country risk, and immediate production, near production in gold and copper in two different countries. So in Southern Africa. Mm-hmm. So feeling quite good about it. And of course, we raised some money recently, which, you know, it's no good acquiring these assets and not progressing them. Mm-hmm. So the money was significant enough to certainly give us immediate short-term progress and to do all the things that we have to do. So that's Extract in a nutshell.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's go into that. So it's Manica Gold. Take us through what's happening there at the moment.
Well, we announced a deal whereby, you know, I looked at the markets as they are now, the capital raising markets, the funding markets for new projects. And quite frankly, Jason, they're not good. So you will know from previous discussions, debates on this site that I justified and thought, and our shareholders, I think, agree that to de-risk the alluvials was a good plan by allowing contractors to finance the operation and have a profit share. And we've taken that, and the cost of money, the requirement for enlisting, recruiting a much bigger staff, all of that's removed by us agreeing with the group that we're working with to get a 23% net profits interest, provided the gold price stays above $1,250, going down to 20% at $1,100, and therefore, and with protected on the downside. So, in essence, that will be a deal which is finalized. Hard rock production, 30 to 35,000 ounces a year, of which we get between 20 and 23% gold price dependent of the net profits interest. And net profits means net profits, because the cost, with the only offset against revenue, can be direct operating cost.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's go into your exploration plays there, and in Zambia. What's happening there on the exploration fund?
Yeah, as I said in the what is extract, that I've been sort of bedded down, if you like, Mozambique. We thought it appropriate now to share risk with another country and another commodity. And I've had some considerable success in Zambia and moved into exploring that IOCG model, which is in central Zambia, dealing with a company called KPZ, who had the Eureka project. And the Eureka project is fairly well known, had some good results from RST, had some good results from Caledonia, and we've acquired it and have already started work on technical work, desk research on aligning past work, digitizing the entire previous work, and identifying drilling targets. So it shouldn't be too long before we're drilling out there, and obviously this new funding will allow us to do just that. And of course we acquired the Matrix project as well, which was a little more greenfields, but again quite a significant strike, same geological system, we've got a trench there, 36 meters at a quite a good grade of 2.8%, and previous mine work and artisanal working. So again, brownfields, not greenfields, not quite as advanced as Eureka, but ready for the drill machine. So Justin, you know, this last finances will allow us to take the drill machine into those two projects.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Okay. And the new acquisition of Kalengwe, processing copper project there, I mean, are you pleased with that? And what's your thoughts?
Very, very excited about the Kalengwe project, Justin. I'm very, very pleased with it, and I'm very positive about it. And as I say, you know, we've got immediate processing potential, low-cost processing potential, and then the potential for a more serious project when we've done our drilling. You know, does that pit extend on strike north-south? And then, of course, you know, that there are indications are, and there's actually drill holes to support, is that if one deepens the pit, there's a significant amount of ore available. So whether we want to dewater a pit or not is to be seen. But we certainly see the much easier pit extensions as to be available to us, and immediate priority to drill those. So when we commission the drill machine, I guess, we'll be drilling it, you know, we'll be drilling the two exploration targets, and we will drill in the extension possibilities as well for the Kalengwe process deal. So that's, you know, that it could be quite a big operation once we've drilled it all out. But at least when you talk about optionality, that if there was no ore at depth, if there was no extension, we've got a good 5 or 6 years mine life at healthy contained copper tonnage. Mm-hmm. If there's pit extension, we've got extended mine life and going towards a mid to large scale project. So a lot of optionality there, and I think you know me from the past, Justin, optionality is what it's all about.
And also in certain parts of Africa you've got to be satisfied with ownership and title. Are you happy then on that front?
Oh, well, you know, before we did the deal, we did all our checking on title. We met the KPZ guys in Cape Town, and they actually approached us because they knew of our efforts at Kalambila. You know, you would be aware that I was the chief executive of, chairman of Kiwara Resources, which made that big discovery in Zambia, the large Sentinel project, which is now operated by First Quantum. So they sought us out as potential partners because they wanted this project to happen, and they wanted to put it in good hands. And of course, before you do anything in this life of ours, in the mining world, you want to make sure that title is intact, that people have got the pieces of paper that they require, and that everything is in order. So obviously we did all of that. We've got a 90-day due diligence, so you know that my life says that when you enter into these sort of deals, get all your ducks in a row and then just double check. And of course, that's what we're doing. That's what we've done. And we're very happy with our partners. And we're happy with the status of the license ownership.
Yeah. Okay, cool stuff. Right, Colin, last thing, as always, if someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing here, you know, and not following the story as yet, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, it's a name company, currently in cash flow, with a cash flow likely to grow over the coming months. It's in copper and gold, both two commodities with good fortunes, immediate and certainly going forward. And there's a disconnect between the market capitalization and the company's prospects. That would be my reasons for saying invest in Xtrang.
Excellent stuff. Colin, good to chat to you. No doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Justin. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. Right, John.
Yes, good form. Thank you.
So lots of things to talk about here. Let's start off with, of course, it affects commodity prices, and that's the US-China trade talks. What's going on with it, John? I've been away for a couple of weeks. I've not been keeping my eyes on the news, and so I've lost a bit of interest in it, but I thought it was getting back together now, but it seems to be falling apart again, isn't it? What's going on?
Well, I'm not sure you missed much while you were away, but the trade talks have resumed, but there's no positive news coming out of that yet, and maybe that's not a surprise because the Americans are going in with tough talks. I don't think they're accepting things at face value from the Chinese. The Chinese need to show that they are going to play ball. They've not been buying U.S. agricultural products, which that's clearly upset Donald Trump. And you know, the Americans, what they want to see that the Chinese are not carrying on with the industrial espionage and the tricks that they've been playing. I mean, the some of the stuff they've been doing about trying to steal technology and get their scientists back from the States is does not look good from a U.S. perspective. So I think there's going to be quite a lot of hard negotiation going on here before there's a settlement. But at the end of the day, I think Trump and President Xi are both keen to find a settlement. It's just where that ends up and what the deal is for the U.S. And it needs to be a better deal than it was, because the U.S. deficit with China was enormous, and needed to be addressed at some stage.
Yeah, but the trouble is, you know, China, as they are, can produce cheap stuff, can't they? And that's the attractiveness of, and that's why there's a deficit, surely.
Well, there's a huge shift in mentality. The Chinese psyche is to produce as much as you can, as cheaply as you can, whereas the Americans are very keen to produce the most expensive products, I think, that they can in many cases, and charge as much as they can for it. Mm. So it would be nice if the Americans produce more cheaply in the sort of method of Henry Ford, but they've kind of gone the other way. If you go into shops and you look to buy American products, they're often priced at whatever they think they can get. Whereas the Chinese are really just selling stuff through Amazon and agencies like that, just looking for mass markets and selling products at low prices.
Yeah, do you know what? And if you look at the back, I've got my iPhone here, and I'm just taking the cover off it. Then right at the back there, it sort of sums up really what Trump is trying to disrupt here. And it says here, designed by Apple in California, assembled in China. You know. And he's trying to stop that, really, isn't he? He would like it all made in America, wouldn't he? You know.
Well, again, your iPhone is an interesting example, because as far as I can see, Apple charge as much as they possibly can for their phones, yeah. Whereas the Chinese came into the market with Huawei and massively undercut Apple, and that no doubt has upset Apple an awful lot. And youngsters were running around waving these wonderful looking phones that were half the price, and who can blame them?
Yeah. Cool. And I mean, depending on the wonder of podcasts, people can listen whenever, but there's going to be a rate cut by the looks of it, isn't it? And that's affecting the price of gold in a positive way, isn't it?
Well, gold's at 14.32 this morning. Yes, it is anticipating a quarter point rate cut later today. If we do, I think the language that the Fed uses will be very important, because if they're going to go for another quarter point cut quite soon, then I think gold prices will carry on going higher, and certainly it's a market that is looking for reasons to appreciate. But that's good for the gold miners, and whatever's good for gold always tends to lift the market, the mining shares in general. It's just one of those sentiment things that gives everything a bit of a boost.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous. Well, let's, any individual stocks worth chatting about?
Well, we've just come off a conference call with ARC Minerals. That was to shareholders and investors. And so they're talking about the discovery at West Shazaya in Zambia. They were talking about the political environment in Zambia, which looks good. The First Quantum have just settled a tax dispute with the authorities there, which is always good to see these things being settled. And ARC Minerals had this extraordinarily good result of 4% copper in their latest drill hole at this discovery. So it's over 7.6 meters, 4.1%, 1.5% copper. The mineralization from my interrogation with the chief geologist sounds as if they have what's known in the region as Tiers Noir, which in the DRC is often very high-grade material. I've been at site with the First Quantum in the past, where they reckon they were mining up to 20% copper in situ. So this is exciting, because what it shows is that some of the high-grade copper that we see in the Congo is actually south of the border in Zambia as well. And this could be an extraordinary discovery for ARC.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. ARCM is ticker there. Any other company news?
Well, there was a bit of news from Keras Resources yesterday, where their investment in Calidus, where they own 39% of that, and in fact they're going to distribute the Calidus shares to all their investors, and those shares are actually worth more than Keras's own shares at the moment. So you're effectively going to get the value of your Keras shares back and still own your Keras shares. But Calidus hit is a short intersection of 1 meter at 107 grams per ton of gold, which probably means it's a fairly nuggety deposit. But when we looked at the longer intersection that they reported, which was 13 meters at 11 grams a ton, which contained that 107 gram per ton section, actually the whole section looks very good. So the rest of that intersection is running at 13 grams a ton, which looks really nice. So well done, Calidus. And we would expect the recent feasibility study, which looked quite good, to actually gain in value quite appreciably, and for there to be a lot more interest in that stock. So so that's nice for Keras.
Yeah, cool. And the KRS ticker there. Anything else?
Well, big news today is from Bushveld Minerals, who had an absolutely storming first half result this morning. The EBITDA was $48 million. So they've done most of what we expected them to do for the year in the first half. Now, that's from a combination of higher vanadium prices, ferrovanadium prices through the first half. They had also a bit of a hangover. They get a bit of delayed pricing, so that helps them. But they've been very good at pushing their unit costs down. So the combination of relatively good vanadium prices, lower costs, and a slightly weaker South African rand serves to mean that their EBITDA margins are over 50%. That will fall through the second half in our view, but I suspect the fourth quarter is going to go better. So we're still looking for the company to produce an EBITDA number of about $77 million for the year, and it raises our valuation to 92 pence a share. So Bushveld's not just about producing ferrovanadium in the form of nitrovan, but it's also about the Bushveld Energy business, which is going to produce these vanadium redox flow batteries. So these are giant batteries for grid storage to go with solar farms and wind farms. And the World Bank has been looking to promote a lot more of this in South Africa. So we think there are going to be some big programs, and Bushveld Minerals, through their Bushveld Energy subsidiary, are very well placed to provide the vanadium electrolyte for those new battery installations.
Mm-hmm. And so what's your target price, John?
Well, we put a valuation of 92p on it because we think that's what the business is worth. Difficult to exactly figure out a target for these companies at the moment. But certainly it's got a lot of upside in it.
Yeah, and just to put that in context at the moment, share price is 26 pence. So hopefully some decent upside there, yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I think the market is... the market likes Bushveld Minerals, but has yet to really get the full value of it.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. John, thanks for that, fella, and hopefully we'll catch up next week.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Emotion Group, talked to Martin early on. At four, Expediator. Expediator, big fall yesterday. At three, Iconic Labs. At two, Rock Rose Energy. And at one, it's Polarian Imaging, P-O-L-X. Yeah, okay, let's go down to the most liked RNSs. By the way, as always, you can find videos on Polarian and Emotion, actually, if you do a search on YouTube. For me, Justin Waite on YouTube. And do us a favour, hit that subscribe and notification bell afterwards, and then you'll get my next video straight to your inbox. Okay. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, it's Harvest Minerals Holdings and Company. At four, Rockrose Energy, PDMR Dealings. At three, Afritin Mining, UIS Tin Mine Operational Update. At two, Zenith Energy, Filing of Quarterly Results and Operational Update. At one, most liked RNS, Rehoboth Resources, Corallian Energy Limited Update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.